Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're with RCR Greenwashed with Don and Jaspreet this Monday morning, and we've got a regular guest back with us today, someone who's been on our show, I think, two or three times before, Sean Rush, former Wellington City Councillor, now working as in his legal practice, and quite active understanding what the heck is going on in the Kapiti Coast area with regard to managed retreat. So welcome back, Sean. Look, you've had a lot of meetings your way recently. There seems to be some activism building, and yeah, it's mystifying to me that it's taken 10 years to build to this sort of crescendo. How are you seeing it playing out?
Well, first of all, I'd say that thanks very much for having me on. Lovely to be back. The dialogue that I've been having with the Kapiti Coast District Council officers has been quite warm and rich. But what I'm seeing, Don, is almost a democracy deficit from our leaders, and that's not their fault. What we are seeing is what climates we might see going forward. And, you know, you find that the Ministry for Environment, who have also been engaging with for over 2 years now, have wedded themselves to the high emission scenarios, which, as some of your listeners will know, have been ruled as highly unlikely or implausible by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So, you know, this is now featuring into what the National Party has kicked off, which is the inquiry into adaptation. And you got to start to think to yourself, okay, what are we adapting to? What's new? And how have things changed? And, of course, we don't know the answer to how things will change because we don't know the future. But the Ministry for Environment invites planners, city councils, and the consulting community to use the types of scenarios that the IPCC has ruled as implausible. And as a consequence, you get quite extreme results when you run these forward, you know, 30, 50 or 150 odd years. And we're required under the legislation to model for 100 years. So instead of actually looking at the realities on the surface, or actually looking at what the science has said, just to back up the truck a wee bit, I suppose, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's sixth assessment report that I was an expert reviewer for, so I know it reasonably well. It's a massive document, but I mean, they basically, we'd already knew that the high-end scenarios for climate outcomes were looking a little bit unlikely. And they even say that in their report. It's an unlikely outcome. This is the scenario known as SSP5-8.5, or commonly known as RCP8.5. So they said that's an unlikely. Now, under the legislation, the Climate Change Response Act, the ministry or the minister is to put together the first climate adaptation plan. And they're supposed to model the likely changes in climate. And the Ministry for the Environment has somehow taken that to mean using this unlikely scenario. And it features throughout all their planning. So I started my journey here with some questions around the sea level rise scenarios, because they were mixing in land subsidence issues that others weren't seeing. The science they were using was quite novel. It all sounded a little bit different from what we could see from the historic trends on the tide gauges. But now I've now come to realise that actually, when you add all that sort of thing to the highest, most catastrophic scenarios, then no wonder you actually get, you know, highly concerning outcomes of, you know, coastal inundation, heavy precipitation, increased cyclones and so on. But These are scenarios, as Professor Dave Frame, IPCC scientist in my lecturer, he's gone on record saying no one believes. So I've approached the Ministry of Environment. I've said, do you realise that there's a, well, first of all, the sixth assessment report called these unlikely. Secondly, all the lead climate modellers in the IPCC posted a new peer-reviewed paper last year claiming that these top-end scenarios were implausible. One of them, Zeke Hausbutter, who the MFE referred to his blog site from 2019, but in his peer-reviewed literature, the IPCC actually cite, he describes it as becoming more and more implausible with every year passing. And he's even got a subheading saying policymakers need to stop using these scenarios use more baseline ones. So you've actually got the science now is actually saying, look, calm down, calm the farm, start using for policy making scenarios that are much more likely. And that's what the law of New Zealand requires. But unfortunately, Don, you know, if you look at the climate literature, the peer-reviewed literature, a significant a plus 50% are all based on this high-end model, because they're the ones that get the big headlines about, you know, the ice sheets are all melting and, you know, we're all going to hell in a handbasket. If you use the sort of more measured ones, which are much more likely and deemed more plausible, you do get changes, and so you do see nuances, but they are much more subtle and they are much more manageable, and you start realizing actually it's not an existential threat. Well, that's a death threat to the Green Party and to Green Party politics, right? You know,
actually, interrupt you, Sean. I'd say it's more than just to the Green Party. It's also a death sentence to the consultant regime that I think has been doling out reports faster than, you know, one can read them. You referred to a deficit of democracy, and I like that. There is a deficit because, as far as I'm concerned, the way I see it, democracy has been outsourced to these consultants. They create these reports, they use these unlikely scenarios, and then they come and defend these as expert witnesses. Where is the science in that?
Yeah, it's a real concern, and it's the commercialization of science, I suppose. You know, as a lawyer, if I go along to court and I've got a defendant. First of all, if my defendant says, oh, I'm guilty, but I want you to defend me anyway, I have to say I can't defend you, right? So if the city council goes along to a scientist or a consultant and says, I want you to give me this outcome, they should say, well, I can't really do that because it's not going to happen. And yet the Royal Society issued a very lengthy report back in 2016 talking about the sort of projections. They were very well done. But on page 33, there was this acknowledgement that there'd been no changes in heavy precipitation events or the frequency or the intensity of storms. So why were they doing a report anyway? But just to go to your point, I think I don't think that that the scientific community has taken climate change science in the non-anthropogenic sense seriously enough. I don't think that because we're not going to see the you know worst outcomes because we think the sensitivity of the climate is less than maybe at one time we did think. I still think though that there's always going to be room for planners. We've always had them, and we've got, you know, a lot more computer firepower. So I don't see necessarily as it being a death threat. But what I do think though is that we'll start seeing a shift. We should start seeing a shift towards what mechanisms are more likely and more bespoke to each region. You've got to remember, climate change on a global average sense is, you know, makes no sense whatever to people on the Kapiti Coast. You can drive from Wellington to Napier and you'll get usually about on average about 3 or 4 degrees of warming just by driving up there. And that's simply because of topography, where it is next to the ocean, what way the wind's blowing. all these sort of things that have got nothing to do with greenhouse gases.
The analogy for me is cats and cream. There's a lot of people feeding out of this, and the people getting the cream are the top end of town with the consultancy and the like. But it's like, yeah, I know I'm deflecting a wee bit. It seems to be this is the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah, we've had 30 years in my working life just playing in this blooming paddock, and it's just wearisome how this has gained the traction it has, and reeling it in is now so hard, or winding it back is now so hard. I mean, we have Lawyers for Climate Action now in New Zealand standing up for climate alarmism. Where's their facts? Where do they base their background on?
Yeah, I might just say a couple of words. I mean, first of all, anyone who feels strongly about something is, more than entitled to stand up and make a stand. As a lawyer, though, we were always taught, and I'm sure still are, that you need to give all the facts to the bench. And I went along to the Court of Appeal and watched one particular leading lawyer talk about climate change as an unquestionable existential threat. And I went up to him afterwards. I said, "No, no scientist thinks that. We were taught at Vic University that it's not an existential threat. And when you take away these high-end models, you're actually there's actually some benefits. One of the models I saw suggested that the South Wairarapa will be have an environment more like that of Northland, which is a hell of a productive place, right? So there's weather and climate changes and human activity will undoubtedly have an impact on it. And that could be because we've cut all the trees down and now we're farming. Well, that changes what your weather patterns can do. Less moisture in the air, more reflection of radiation forcing. But what I was trying to encourage this chap to do was to tell the court that actually there's a lot of uncertainty out there with climate models that it won't be an existential threat. And he just took the view, well, it's just a question of definition. And I actually went to one of New Zealand's leading King's Counsel because I was concerned, well, should I be telling the court as a my duty as an officer of the court? And he said, I think they might just think you're interfering. But he was very concerned that there was ambiguity that's being left on the table. And this chap wasn't prepared to clarify it. But I've seen that the Crown in one particular case just didn't offer any evidence. The recent case with Mike Smith and Fonterra has gone all the way up to the Supreme Court and now back to the High Court without Mr. Smith offering one shred of
Piece of
evidence
evidence.
that his whenua has been affected by climate change. So you've got these lawyers, and they all love living in this kind of legal space where we talk about the niceties of expanding tort law and how would that come about, and it's all very, very fun. But in the real world, Z Energy is trying to sell petrol to Mr. Smith, or maybe he's using diesel on his farm with his tractor. Fonterra are feeding babies in China. This is the real world, folks, and this sort of distraction is simply not helpful. I mean, the Crown seem to fight these cases under the last government, one arm behind their back. I said to the Crown, I said, "Why aren't you guys, saying about this?" "Oh, well, we took the view we wouldn't." Some companies, such as Z Energy, might not want to put their hand up and actually start bringing proper data because they might fear reprisals from the activist community. Shell had activists set fire to gas stations in Germany. There was a big boycott, affected their share price. There's that sort of pressure as well.
John, you mentioned that there's no death threat. I agree from, anthropogenic climate change here, but there are people in the community who are going to be facing virtually metaphorically speaking, a death threat because this National Coastal Adaptation Plan, for which the submissions close, listeners, if you are planning on submitting one, I get it in soon on 16th of June, the next Sunday, midnight. it is going to be a death sentence to some people for their properties, for their property rights. What are you seeing real life repercussions right now on the coast?
Yeah. And you see parallels with this in the seismic strengthening space where, retired folks sell up a family home in Kelburn, move into the CBD of Wellington. Next thing you know, some consultancy report changes all the rules and they've got to spend $600,000 to strengthen their apartment, which to them seems perfectly livable. And this is what we're going to have with the managed retreat thing, where we're going to be told that this is an unsafe area for you to live, and you'll be certainly going, well, looks okay to me. Well, why don't you just leave me be? It is important the government knows the strength of this feeling. I mean, we know through real estate agents they are being asked about sea level rise in the Kapiti Coast. There are already notations on the limb reports that the city council put in without telling anyone, suggesting that these properties are subject to review under the inundation program, and that's enough to scare anyone off. Insurance, so we know at least one person who was told by Tower Insurance that we're not going to be insuring because of coastal inundation threats. So, you know, you've got, this is happening all around the country too. It's not just in Kapiti. Kapiti have been well organised for a long time and successfully took the council to court back in 2013 when this sort of shenanigans was started off back in those days as well. And the thing is that most people find climate science very difficult to read, very difficult to understand. It's the peer-reviewed literature sits behind paywalls. But actually, when you get to grips with it, you start realizing that with all the good science, most of the observations show not many changes. So NIWA's report to Greater Wellington Regional Council on rainfall showed there'd been no changes in rainfall over the last 60 years. But that's not what the Greater Wellington didn't put that out as a headline. The headline was that there was going to be changes in the Western Rimitakas, I think it was, which...
Is that lying? Is that deception? What is that? Because who's going to read a 100-plus page report? People are just going to look at the messaging that's been put out by the local representatives.
Yeah. I mean, I caught NIWA had put in the executive summary prominently that the rainfall had increased at the Wellington-Kelvin rain gauge. But buried away in the body of the paper was an acknowledgement that that rain gauge should be treated with scepticism, because the airport rain gauge nearby had the opposite sign and none of the others in the area had any changes. But nevertheless, in the executive summary, paragraph 2, rainfall in the Wellington rain gauge had increased. I caught them out on that, and the next update they did, that was removed.
Well, misinformation.
And then what happens is that the Greater Wellington Com staff pull out whatever they can to make it all sound very scary. And that's the message that goes out. Greater Wellington say government needs to give us more money. Ministry of Environment say government needs to give us more money. The consultant community, Becker, Jacobs, NIWA, they all say, well, we can help you. You need to hire us and we'll give you the solutions. It's a bit of a money go around, really. Your money.
Well, all the ratepayers around New Zealand and the taxpayers around New Zealand deserve a lot better than they're getting from their administrators and their elected officials, actually, because it's coming at great cost. All this is a massive impost on your life, let alone your worthiness in terms of your property values, your insurances, your bankability. There's so much coming down the pike at us, and we just seem to be going on unabated. This inquiry that closes off next week, what hope do we have that we're going to stem the tide here? We're going to stem the tide. I don't have great hope because this, no one seems to be.
I don't know. Look, you know, as some of your listeners will know, I stood for the ACT Party. I remain in Otaki. I remain reasonably close to folks who are, you know, senior in that party. They are one part of the government coalition The National Party seem all in on climate change. They don't want to even stop to think that maybe the narrative needs to be drawn back a bit. The idea that they're going to electrify everything. So, you know, I just think that, you know, we just need to keep going at the politicians and at the scientists. I mean, I would like to see a politician, Penny Simmons at Ministry for Environment, come out and say, I want to see a better review on the use of these high-end models. Give it to the Climate Change Commission to make a ruling on it. I'd be very comfortable with that because one of the authors of the paper is a member of the Climate Change Commission. So, you know, I'm pretty comfortable that the position I'm articulating is correct. But, you know, otherwise it'll go to judicial review, Dom. And, you know, combining my master's in law and my master's in climate change science and policy is something that I'm doing. That's my new sort of, I've just set up a not-for-profit. You'll hear a bit more about that at another time. But, you know, you can't have a national adaptation plan that requires you to use likely climate effects and then base everything on an unlikely climate scenario. You simply can't.
Well, yeah. There's plenty of people who have, as I said, they're getting the cream at the moment, and it's coming at great cost. And it's my view, and I don't want to discount anything you've said in this interview, that it's time New Zealanders put a stake in the ground and said, and woke up and said, no more. We can't afford this nonsense any longer. We deserve better. And property rights, all those sort of things come into it. But, well, Sean, look, we're in your debt again because you have such a handle on this. We just hope that in your region you get some peace soon on it, although I'm not holding my breath. And as again, I just repeat myself, the whole country is under the pump on this scenario of RCP 8.5. It's damaging far more to citizens than it is to the environment. So, look, let's hope we can get some common sense very soon. Thanks for coming back on RCR Greenwashed.
Thanks, Don. Cheers, Jaspreet. All the best.
Thank you. See you around.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.